It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for
it. Wait for it.
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Hello, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. It's also available as a podcast on Mondays. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Joining me today, one of my regulars, keeping me company today, the director of On-Air Branding and Special Promotions, Mike Perry, who noticed something different at the beginning of the show.
No Kill Bill, man.
I know. Well, you know, it's been over a year now, and it's not a new show anymore.
Yeah.
So I kind of chopped it up a little bit and thought, you know what, I think Curtis Mayfield needs to be on Film Sociology more. So there you go. One of these days, if I get all the rights, you know, the Film Sociology soundtrack.
There you go.
Music inspired by, so... Whew, what a week.
Yeah, been busy, have you?
I've been busy, yeah. Working on, of course, Three Musketeers at Mud Creek Players, which opened last week, went over really well. And we run this weekend, including a Sunday matinee, and then next weekend. So, and ran into somebody from your past over at Indie Style TV. So thanks to those folks for letting a fat bearded guy go on the television. It's nice.
My old friend Peggy McClellan's the executive producer of that show, and I used to work with Tracy when
I know.
We were both at Fox.
Haven't seen Tracy in a long time. I see Dubex from time to time.
Yeah.
You know, his wife wasn't there. A kid, Mark. I'm going to see you next week at Iron Man 2. It's all right. But no, I appreciate everybody letting us go on there and talk. So, but I was going through, and of course, big shocker, the new Nightmare on Elm Street film not screened for the press. And I have to admit, the only reason why I want to see it is to see what Jackie Earle Haley does.
Yeah, I really don't have a strong desire to
desire. Yeah,
I was never a big fan of the original series, so, but I do like Jack Earl. So,
well,
that's the only draw.
I like the first. I think Nightmare's one of those. The first film is pretty good. You got a good director like Wes Craven, and I think like Rocky and Death Wish, you kind of forget how good the first one is because there's so many cruddy sequels.
Yeah. By the time Freddy was taking on Jason, it was just ridiculous.
Well, that's that was the thing that also cinched for me the I don't believe anything until I see a poster or trailer, because that rumor had been going on for decades. So
yeah.
So anyway, I mean, I got into a thing with Dubek, with Mark Dubek off the air during Indie Style TV, and I'll have him on the show one of these days to recount this, but he was doing his review of the film. Well, he mentioned the film that it opened, and he only referred to him as Kelly from the Bad News Bears, and I of course, during the commercial break window, I said, hey, give the man his name. The guy's got an Oscar nomination.
And, yeah, he does.
And I was told he'll only be remembered as that. And I said, that's really not fair.
He's got a TV gig now, and he's on Human Target on Fox.
And Tracy, of course, brought up Breaking Away.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the kid's got a career. He hasn't been seen in a long time, but he's got a career. So we like that. He's not a that guy.
No.
He's in Watchmen. So anyway, that wasn't screened for us. However, there is and of course, at Film Sociology, we get the champion the small film whenever possible. Really, the real reason Mike Perry was there is you heard that I had talked with Connie Nielsen, but it's already recorded, so I'm sorry. She's not here.
Oh, man.
I know.
Well, what
I
time
know.
Is it?
I know you had your posters of freeze frame shots from Gladiator and Devil's Advocate for her to sign. No, I'm afraid not. Well, but she's in a new film called A Shine of Rainbows, and this is the latest of the Truly Moving Pictures stamp of approval. And well, it's a, you know what? I'm going to play the trailer and then I'll explain it to you. Hold on.
Thank you.
Welcome to Coryland. He hardly says a word.
Give him time, Alec. Everything here is so strange to him.
Did you not know she has a special powers?
They can find spirits who have passed on.
Don't stare at them. I turn you to stone.
You're disappointed.
I don't see why you chose the run for the letter.
I'm going to call you Smudge. And down to Mass.
I know you wished for our own child. But have you considered that maybe Tomas is a gift to us?
If I could call you, Mum, I could believe it.
Then why not call me Mum? I'd like that.
Now, I wanted to hear a little bit of it before I talk. And by the way, I was not allowed to speak during the trailer because there's two favorite things of Mike's going on, Connie Nielsen and a female Irish voice.
Oh. Love me a nice Irish lass.
Stay over there. And so we have, Aidan Quinn and Connie Nielsen. Now, they play a couple that can't have children because I was about to say, that's some fine-looking children right there. Mm-hmm. And they adopt a young lad who Quinn calls the runt of the litter because he cannot speak and is very dainty. And through the power of motherly love, she gets him to open up. And there's a few things about the film. It's John Bell, I think it's his first film, who plays the kid. And the film is directed by a gentleman from India, Vic Sarin. And so I thought it was interesting. I think I like when directors from different countries are filming in other countries. I think most notably, most recently, I think of Jill Wright directing The Soloist after doing mm-hmm. films in England. So it's a new viewpoint of a country. And it's a sweet film. Obviously, it has the truly moving pictures sign of approval, which it deserves, rightly so. You know, it's a bonding film between a boy and his now mother and boy and father. Now, yes, it is. Aidan Quinn does play the gruff Irish father, and there's a whiskey.
Well, there's no other kind.
I'm hoping we can find the sensitive Irish father in a film sometime, or email me if I'm missing one, because it's like I often talk about how much people have talked about the Keira Knightley Pride and Prejudice, or, you know, Jane Austen 101. I love the fact that Donald Sutherland breaks down and weeps as Mr. Bennett. No Austen male does that, but it was cool to see that. So I'm waiting to see a soft, vulnerable Irish father. And Matt Sosie, msosie@wfyi.org, if there was one I missed.
If you're a kind Irish father, we'd like to hear from you today.
Prove me right, okay? But this is a very affectionate couple, which is nice to see. It's not an Angela Asher's How Green Is My Valley stoic kind of story. And as you hear me say with Connie Nielsen, probably the most angelic Irish mother in movie history, and that's topping Brenda Fricker.
Oh, cool.
But there are rainbows, and there are seals, and there are kids, and life lessons are learned, and something tragic is going to happen. I don't want to give away too much, but I think you can find, kind of figure it out. But there's been no advertising for this whatsoever.
Well, it's a public service. Let's tell people where it is, because it was not on my Yahoo's movie listing.
You
today.
Didn't get any correct information? You didn't get a piece of information correct on the internet? No.
No.
It's at Keystone Landmark Art Cinemas. Go up there. That's where it is. It's the only theater in town that's carrying it. So go and do that. And this is, again, it's a sweet film, little film. Sometimes you've got to, I do get on my high horse and pull up my black socks and tell you folks to go champion a picture you've not heard of, or just give a sweet film a chance. And that's what I'm saying for this.
And the name of it is again?
It is A Shine of Rainbows, and it's playing, of course, at Keystone Arts Cinemas. So check this out.
Now that was a good movie.
And it is. And a little later on, you'll hear my interview with Connie Nielsen that I got to do earlier this week. And fun talking about it. It was fun going through her resume. Obviously, going back as far as Devil's Advocate, which you know, we can't talk about it in Mixed Company. There is no Mixed Company.
Oh, it's just us. All right.
It's pretty stunning. And by the way, I brought it up and she didn't slap me. But of course, Gladiator. But I was going through the number of directors that she has worked with. And there are films maybe you don't think of most right off the bat with them, but she's worked with Harold Ramis, John Dahl, William Friedkin, Ridley Scott, of course, Brian De Palma, P.T. Anderson, not Paul Thomas Anderson, right. Wes Anderson, and Taylor Hackford.
Wow.
So
that's a nice range there.
So if you remember, of course, Mission to Mars, Soldier, Rushmore, Permanent Midnight, The Hunted, The Great Raid, The Ice Harvest, One Hour Photo, Basic, and of course the others. But that's not a bad a bad career for a lady still working in the business. We like that.
I'm looking forward to the interview.
Which we'll get to in just a moment. Now, Mr. Perry, you've been catching up on stuff that opened. I know you saw at least one film I didn't get a chance to see last week.
I saw The Losers.
And based on a comic?
It's based on a graphic novel.
Graphic novel. Sorry, Basement Dwellers. It's not a comic. It's a graphic novel.
And if my basement dwelling friend in Iowa was listening, he really didn't mean it. You should see this guy's wall. I mean, he's got boxes and boxes full of classic comics.
But does he go out?
Yeah.
Does he have a job?
He has a life.
Okay, I stand corrected?
University professor. And all
okay, sir, I'm not talking about you.
Okay.
All right, it's fine. But go on.
The Losers, I found very entertaining. It's pretty much the A-Team story, a band of mercenaries.
Wait, that's coming out this summer.
It's coming out this summer. But it's a very similar, you know, setup, you know, this... team of mercenaries gets framed for something they didn't do. And
is Robert Vaughn chasing them?
No, that's the TV show. But Jason Patrick chases them.
Boy, that's, well, he,
and
I guess.
He plays the heavy in this one.
I guess he does. He can do heavy.
But it's a very funny film. You got your wisecracking mercenaries against your wisecracking villains.
Oh, great.
And
everybody's funny.
Right. And they get a little bit of help from Zoe Saldana.
Uh-oh. Calm down. Steady, boy.
She's everywhere. You know, she had Death at a Funeral come out last week.
Oh, my gosh. That's right. She was in that.
She's got Takers coming out pretty soon.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, she's on a roll. And
so she's not getting married to James Cameron. Well, that's how he works. We've talked about this.
I know.
Filmmaking Rod Stewart.
I know, but I don't want that picture in my head.
I don't either.
I need to scrub my brain now. But anyway, it's a very funny movie. It didn't open as well as they probably would have liked for it to warrant a sequel. But if you this weekend's kind of weak on major releases, so. If you want to get out of the rain and go see a film, I would recommend The Losers.
And who'll stop the rain? And who'll stop the rain?
And who'll stop the rain?
Now, is it ridiculous action film? Are we talking like Wanted ridiculous or Shoot 'em Up ridiculous or Kick-Ass ridiculous?
It's not Shoot 'em Up ridiculous. I mean, it's the same kind of violence you would see in the A-Team, maybe a little bit more.
Okay.
You know, there's a scene where a guy gets thrown off a roof. There is some blood in this movie.
There will be
blood. But, yes, there will be blood. But it's still well in the range of comic book violence. And, you know, it's very well written. And, you know, Jeffrey Dean Morgan does a great job.
Chris Evans has a pulse in this?
Yeah, Chris Evans plays nerd in this. So.
Okay.
But, you know, it's worth the matinee price, anyway.
Okay. Also opening nationwide, a Furry Vengeance. Furry Vengeance with Brendan Fraser. I didn't see it. I know you. I can feel your bile.
I mean, I've seen the trailers. It's just
And also opening locally of, pardon my time, Vincere, the story of Mussolini's secret lover, also at Keystone Cinema. So there's four. But I'm telling you to go give Shine a Rainbows a good chance. And of course, you're saying Losers, give that a chance.
Yep. And the other big film I saw last week was Oceans, the Disney nature.
Yes, that's right, movie. from the folks who gave us Earth.
First there's Earth. First they created the Earth, and then they created Oceans. And
yes, do tell.
This is a stunningly beautiful film.
It should.
I am shocked that it's not in IMAX or 3D or both, but it is just a beautiful movie. It doesn't quite follow the same, follow the same animals through the year that Earth did.
Okay.
But it's pretty much a day in the life of all the oceans. So,
not Danny Ocean.
Not Danny Ocean.
Or Billy Ocean.
Or Ocean's 11.
Okay.
Or
any of
12
those.
Or 13, any okay. of them. But if you like undersea adventures, if you're a big fan of them over at the IMAX, you will like this movie. My jaw was just hanging open at some of these scenes. I don't know how they got some of these shots. There's a scene with one of the photographers swimming alongside a great white shark.
Wow.
As if it were a dolphin. That is, it's just incredible. So if you're into the nature films,
gorgeous photography.
Way recommend this movie.
See, I'm really happy that films like this are starting to become more and more accessible. I mean, I know we had Winged Migration and I know March of the Penguins and oh my gosh, Ed Johnson's going to kill me because I forgot it. The Parrot film.
The Parrot. Wasn't that the name of it? The Parrot.
No, it's not called that. It's something else, and he'll thrash me for not knowing the title because he liked it better than Penguins. But and Earth. I mean, the fact that and kudos to Disney. Yes, I'm saying kudos to Disney for putting down big chunk of change make this visually stunning film. That's just visually cool, and you get to see the animals. Lots of kids at your screening.
Not as many as I was expecting. A lot of adults at it. It was a well attended screening. A few, maybe kids a little bit too young were there, but it's really not. It's not a graphically brutal adventure nature thing.
Okay.
Like maybe the one they're making for next year, African Cats, which follows a family of tigers and a family of lions.
Oh my!
Oh my! No bears.
No bears. That's all right.
But if you get a chance, go see Oceans before it goes away.
Okay.
Or before another oil spill.
Jeez. Wow. Thanks for bringing that up. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to talk about a bunch of things that are new on DVD and old titles on DVD. Well, actually, old titles on Blu-ray, because that's how it works nowadays. Mm-hmm. So, Matt Soci, M. Soci at WFYI.org, also Facebook. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Whoa, wrong music break. Let's try this.
Have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. I'm Matthew Soci along with Mike Perry. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci, that's msocey, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Shameless plug. this weekend, tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday afternoon is a production of Three Musketeers at Mud Creek Players, directed by yours truly. Evening performances at 8, matinee Sunday at 2:30, and then it's also going to be running a week from tonight and tomorrow. So you can go to 290-5343 for reservations, or go to mudcreekplayers.org. I think if you even go to mudcreekplayers.com, you'll get to the same place. And I assured my cast, as soon as this production is over, you can go back to watching whichever version you prefer. I prefer, of course, the Richard Lester version over the too Disney-fied version from the 90s.
And they can check out, in essence, the trailer at the Indie Style.
Yeah, you can see we did a sword fighting demonstration on Indie Style TV this morning, which is a nice change of pace from gardening and cooking. No, that's fine too as well. They do that. So okay. Well, there's two films I need to talk about that are new on DVD, and then there's an update on a film that came out on DVD recently, plus an old title. Well, I love talking about old titles on DVD and Blu-ray, so we'll get those into a little bit. But finally on DVD, and this is where I have to ask, I think, a bunch of you this question.
Where were you? Where the fuck are you? Where were you?
I ask that to everybody who didn't see the new Terry Gilliam film, The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, which is finally out on DVD and Blu-ray. It's not just for you, in general. But Terry Gilliam, one of the finest visionary directors, visual directors, really, of this generation and any others. This stars Christopher Plummer as an entertainer who makes a deal with the devil, played by, no shock, Tom Waits. And this also is a film that's noted as the final performance of Heath Ledger. This is the film he worked on when he died. So, and we'll talk a little bit more about the film and how they got around such a wrinkle in just a little bit.
A thousand years ago, Dr. Parnassus made a deal with the devil.
Stop!
You're probably not a betting man, are you?
To gain immortality.
It's been a while.
But this came with a price.
Any child worth at the age of 16 belonged to him.
Now, a mysterious outsider.
Can you put a price on your dreams?
Will take the traveling show beyond their imaginations.
The extraordinary Dr. Parnassus.
What do you say? First to five souls.
Voila. Voila.
Okay, before we talk about the film, I was berating Mr. Perry over here about missing this because he started to sound like, well, people who miss movies. And we've come up with a new campaign for Mike Perry. You want to do what now?
I want an art cinema to open on the west side.
So there you go. So
I mean, I live in Speedway. I love going to the Landmark.
Yes, we know.
But man, with the construction going on in that area right now, it's just... I kind of really want to see that movie.
Do you
movie
hear
back.
This? Okay, so this is your... you.
So please, if anybody from, you know, Landmark Theaters is listening, please...
Oh, they listen.
You know, a four-screener, something on the west side.
I would love to have a four-screener. I'd love to have more than one art theater in the city. Apparently we can't, but we got to work on that. So actually, you need to create a Facebook page and set up a fan page of art theaters on Indy's west side. So that's cool. That's your project.
Or at least, you know, Trader's Point, please just show a couple, dedicate a couple of screens to them, you know?
So you've heard Mike Perry. He has spoken on this one. Well, I really enjoyed, and guess what? I missed it too, because I think it only lasted in town for a week.
It wasn't in town very long.
So, And you know, if I was running things, well, if I was running things, that would be really scary. But I think the films of Terry Gilliam would be the ones making $200 to $300 million if I had any say in it whatsoever. I mean, truly an original filmmaker. And I think this is one of those guys, and I've talked with Chris Lloyd about the auteur theory. I think even when he makes a misfire, I know a lot of people slammed Brothers Grimm pretty hard, his last picture.
Yeah.
But I think even a misfire by Terry Gilliam is usually heads and tails above most of the stuff that is out there today.
I was surprised by the negative reviews that film got, because I took my daughter to see it. It was an enjoyable cinematic experience.
I think also there's a higher expectation with Gilliam.
Yeah.
I think you have to be of a profound Brazil high point or something like that. And I mean it was a fairly simple con artist who actually have to actually do some work kind of story with the girl who looks like Keira Knightley but isn't.
Mm.
Steady.
Yeah.
So that being said, the other thing that I was surprised that this film didn't do, not as many people went to see this, was to see Heath Ledger's final performance.
Right.
What they did in the film was they were able to take his character and, well, they kept all the footage, but they added Jude Law, Johnny Depp, and Colin Farrell to fill in the roles based on different characters' points of view of the Heath Ledger character, which I thought was a really wise move, and it works and it doesn't feel like a stretch.
That's a brilliant way to cover. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, because what's your alternative? You junk the film?
Yeah, and well, here, and this is a man who already has Lost in La Mancha, well, or, you know, his Don Quixote film that was already had to be tanked. So, can't afford to have junk two major films in one career. So it was interesting. I mean, it's a decent performance by Ledger. Good year for Christopher Plummer between working on this and, of course, getting the nomination finally for Last Station. Waits is fine. Everybody in it's just very solid, but the visuals in this film are amazing, as usual they are in a Terry Gilliam picture. And I think Chris Lloyd of the Film Map refers to this as Gilliam's best film since The Fisher King. And I'll ponder that. I'm like, well, one would say 12 Monkeys, others might say Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I'm not sure. But I will say this, that I like the connection with Fisher King. I think I'm more intrigued when Gilliam mixes his fantasy world with the modern world. Fisher King's a great example of that. And I think it goes a little further because of this traveling magic show, for lack of a better comparison, with the plumber and the daughter. And, yeah, he makes a deal with the devil and has to give up his 16-year-old daughter. And, well, of course, like most dads, didn't have the heart to really tell her. And by the way, Vern Troyer's in this scene is actually pretty good, too. He's not chasing after strippers in real life for being on VH1. But if you enjoy visuals, like I said, you go see Oceans, and then you go rent The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
Good deal.
And then take Mike Perry with you.
Yeah, please.
You should. So, overall, yeah. Also on DVD this week, one of the bigger films, bigger hits involving older people, not old people, but the romantic comedy It's Complicated with Meryl Streep, Alec Baldwin, and Steve Martin and John Krasinski for those under the age of 40, which is all right. And it's, of course, directed by Nancy Myers, who gave us What Women Want, Something's Gotta Give, and other romantic comedies involving white people. Here's a trailer.
You look good, Janie.
Yeah.
You do. You always do. Your hair's shorter.
Longer.
I like it.
Getting to the point.
Knowing how to be divorced is next to impossible.
Not that I want him back.
Of course not. He cheats on you. Your 20-year marriage ends. And then he marries her.
Sometimes it hurts.
Joe, you are so lucky Jerry is dead.
Thank you.
You don't have to bump into him.
Oh, that's true.
Remember what we said.
My marriage is not turning out as I hoped.
Honey, I'm ovulating.
Daddy, are you crying?
Tearing yourself away.
One tiny note, no his and her things.
And you don't think in the future you might want a his?
Oh my God, now we're talking code about my life.
You make it.
OMG, I thought he'd never leave.
What are you doing here?
I've never really known how to live without you.
And it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
I'm having an affair with a married man. You're not saying.
Oh, yes, I am. Turns out, I'm a bit of a slut.
I thought it was smoking hot.
Oh, God.
My love has no fear.
What about the fact that I'm now the other woman? I'm the one we hate.
He was yours first.
True.
Why are you taking yourself to the bathroom?
Oh,
Lost in a spin.
My God.
And you don't know.
Should be growing old together.
I hate to tell you, but we already grew old apart.
That nerdy architect really likes you. You know that, don't you?
I haven't had blood in almost 3 years, Jake.
They must be hammered.
Something like that.
Hey, there's your ex-husband.
Uh-oh.
Not a great time to be feeling groovy.
Oh, Jane?
It's complicated. Let's see if we can make this work.
We can't, Jake.
Can we just hug?
Oh, God. No, see? Too much.
Okay, good note.
A film by Nancy Myers.
Well, on paper, first off, the big three work really well.
Oh, yes, they do.
They work very well.
I mean, Baldwin is his usual charming snake.
And you see more of Baldwin than you really need to.
Yeah, but he makes him sympathetic. I felt sorry for him by the end of the movie. And without giving anything away, I mean, you pretty much guess how this turns out.
Come on.
But he wasn't quite the, I guess for a better word, villain that I expected him to be in this thing.
I think for at least 2 hours you forget about phone calls he leaves on his daughter's voicemail.
Right.
So that's something to be said.
And Meryl Streep is just laugh-out-loud funny in this movie.
Well, it's interesting that she's able to, I mean, you know, for years and years and years doing all this, you know, the heavy, serious stuff, and now she's able to do, you know, some lighter fare, like Julie and Julia.
And Steve Martin is not the crazy one in this movie.
No, he plays it straight, and he needs to, especially after some of the remakes he's done. There are certain aspects that come with Nancy Meyer films that, and some of it works really well for me. She always gets really good performances out of people. You know, going back with Diane Keaton and Jack Nicholson and Mel Gibson and Helen Hunt and all that sort of thing. But there are other aspects of her writing that kind of bug me a little. And the question is, do the things that bug me distract me from the film? I've checked with my wife and I've checked with others of women really squealing and jumping around like that when they're having wine together over the age of 50.
I have friends in that age range, and I haven't heard them squeal in a while.
Okay, I'm just, and by the way, I don't need to see any more squares getting high. That's and dancing to the oldies. That's a little tiresome for me.
But Steve Martin getting high is usually comedy gold, and it wasn't so much that struck me as funny, but everyone else's reaction to it. John Krasinski got bigger laughs for me during the party scene.
And nice for him to come off the bench and nail a few threes. And then, you know, I love mixing basketball with film. So,
but I just thought it was, like I said, while the trailer was going on, you don't see the funniest stuff in the trailer.
That's something to be said.
So, you know, it's worth a Netflix or a rental.
And, yeah, and, of course, it's a romantic comedy with people over the age of 30.
Now that was a good movie.
Yes, it was. Okay.
It gives hope to the rest of us.
It does give hope to the rest of us. All right, a couple updates I need to talk about. I know a few weeks ago I talked about Pirate Radio.
Love Pirate.
And, I'd heard, and my information was correct, there on the DVD there are the deleted scenes. You know, the UK version was almost 3 hours, and there's about 45 minutes of deleted scenes on the disc, and I watched them.
Were they deleted for a reason?
No, not all. Actually, there's two or three moments that I laughed harder than the film itself. Overall, the film I thought was, you know, very episodic as a Richard Curtis film, but I needed more than just, you know, Pirate Radio good, government bad. It was very kind of simplistic.
Right.
I mean, everybody in it was fine. You know, one aspect that and they only do one extra moment on it is the so-called rivalry between Philip Seymour Hoffman and Reese Ifans, and I thought that was a bigger chunk of the film that was deleted. It's not. But there are several scenes, two or three scenes, that, I mean, were laugh-out-loud funny, and that's something to be said when you're laughing louder in the deleted scenes than you are in the film itself. And he said, at the beginning of the introduction of the deleted scenes, Richard Curtis, the writer and director, said that, you know, you could take, it was almost like a cut and paste. you know, you could take some stuff out of what turned out to be the finished U.S. product and put this stuff in, and it would probably work just as well as what came out. So, but yeah, I guess he couldn't put out a 3-hour film in the States, and that's kind of a shame.
Americans have no patience.
That's and yeah, you people, you know, not
yeah.
you people, but you know, people you know.
Yes.
So I mean, it's a shame. I actually did want to spend more time with these folks, and I'm glad I did. I just now I'm intrigued if there ever will be the 3-hour, so I don't have to keep going back and forth from deleted scenes. Come on, folks. So that's. That's worth checking out. So check out the deleted scenes on that. And finally, and I have to say, I bought this and then I lost it, and then I have to give kudos to Emma for finding it between the cushions of our futon. But the 1979 TV miniseries, not really miniseries, it was a 3-hour film, of Elvis.
Oh, with Kurt Russell.
With Kurt Russell and directed by John Carpenter.
Nice.
This was Carpenter's follow-up to Halloween. And I get to hit you with this nugget of useless information. Of course, Kurt Russell was his first film was an Elvis film. He was in It Happened at the World's Fair. There is one
I did not know that.
There is the one where Elvis is trying to get chatty with the nurse, so he gives a kid a nickel to kick him in the shins.
That's
Kurt Russell. And Elvis's last film, the ghetto drama Change of Habit,
mm-hmm.
he plays ghetto singing, swinging big city doctor John Carpenter.
Wow.
I know. Thrilled, aren't you?
It's like Lincoln had a secretary named Kennedy, and
right.
Kennedy had a secretary named Lincoln.
And they were both members of the Jordanaires. So, but I remember my mother was a big Elvis fan, and I've talked about this before with Emma, and you've all heard about this. But this was actually, I mean, this came after Roots, but this was mm-hmm. a major movie event on television. And so, and this made the transition for Kurt Russell from boy to man.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he had gone from kid to teenager to man. And of course, badass thanks to Escape from New York. but he's really, really good in it. Pat Hingle is the Colonel. Shelley Winters is his mom. Susan Hubley, his first wife, played Priscilla. Yes. Joe Montana. You remember Susan Hubley, huh? Vice Squad and Escape from New York and. Well, all right,
I remember from her television roles, too. She was, I remember her very fondly in Family.
Oh, my gosh, that's right. So yeah, anyway, it's I think it's Shout Factory has put it out, and it's worth watching. If you're an Elvis fan of any kind or Kurt Russell in general, I think that's worth checking out. So
got a list of some of the other releases. Tombstone's out on Blu-ray
now. Tombstone is out on Blu-ray. And you know what? Because I own the 2-disc set.
I do too.
And if there's, you got to give me more stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I love watching that, and it's funny to watch Kurt Russell do his Clint Eastwood impression, and Val Kilmer's really just solid, rock solid as everyone's favorite Huckleberry. But I'm not ready to buy that again unless I know there's a bunch of other stuff on that.
And the other title that's leaping out at me is on DVD. It's Gary Shandling Show. I know it's not a movie,
but you're going to mention
that. But if you remember that series from the 80s or early 90s, one of the ones that Fox gave birth to after Showtime ran it, it's very funny.
Well, don't worry. I actually had circled on mine Last of the Summer Wine, vintage 1982-83.
There's our shout-out to Richard Milder.
Yes, exactly. Also on Blu-ray, I'm not going to buy this, but you might, Armageddon.
Yeah, I won't buy it.
I guess
but I might buy Dune. It's out on Blu-ray, too.
I need to watch that in a different frame of mind. I don't. You're a Dune fan? You enjoy that?
Yeah, I'm
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it could have been. The movie could have been better.
All right.
But
did you see the one with the remake?
No.
With Wayne Hurt?
No.
Nothing?
No. Okay. I didn't want that replacing my memories of this.
Okay. All right. And Out of Africa, also on Blu-ray, if you're into that sort of thing. A couple other titles, thanks to the Criterion. Ride with apparently a director's cut of Ang Lee's Ride with the Devil. That was the Ang Lee film mm-hmm. nobody saw, with Tobey Maguire and Jewel, and also The Fugitive Kind, which kind of bugs me. I found it used for $4, so it's not that big of a deal. But it's directed by Sidney Lumet and it's based on a Tennessee Williams play. I believe it's a play with Marlon Brando, Joanne Woodward, and Anna Magnani. So I think this was her follow-up to Rose Tattoo, but it is a teaming of Brando and Williams, and not quite the same sparks as Streetcar Named Desire, but still a pretty good film nonetheless. And you get a trashy Joanne Woodward. Just, anyway, we should move on. So we're gonna take a short break, and I gotta pay tribute to a famed film editor and my exclusive, I call it that, exclusive chat with Connie Nielsen. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. And speaking of which, welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Mike Perry is here with me, but for now I'm going to play for you. Wow. Let's move on, shall we? This is an exclusive chat I had with actress Connie Nielsen, who is in the film A Shine of Rainbows, which opened today in Indianapolis. She's here to talk about the film and other things that I throw at her because she's a really good sport. Joining me on Film Sociology is a woman, an actress, who most recently has now played the most angelic Irish mother in cinema history. Connie Nielsen, how are you?
I am very well. How are you?
I think you stole Brenda Fricker's title from My Left Foot.
All right.
Tell us, for those who don't know, tell us a little bit about A Shine of Rainbows.
A Shine of Rainbows is the story of a couple who live on a remote island in the north, between Ireland and Scotland, during the 60s, early 60s. These are very sort of backwards kinds of places, but incredibly beautiful. And this couple have not been able to have any children. And the film starts basically with the woman going to an orphanage on the mainland and choosing a child to bring home. And her way of dealing with life is by embracing it, by loving life. And she expresses that through a love of nature, of colors. And she just exudes this warmth when she chooses this child who is a very backward child. He can hardly actually even speak. He stutters, and he is afraid of his own shadow, and he literally comes to this place and is the most wretched little boy. And my husband, played by Aidan Quinn, is having a hard time understanding why I've taken such a weak, so to speak,
the runt child. The runt of the litter, I believe he said.
That's right. He calls it the runt of the litter. And he's having a hard time recognizing his own, personality in this boy, and doesn't know how to communicate with him. And instead, my character, she goes about giving him little chores that he can succeed at. She gives him his own room. She has made this, knitted these beautiful sweaters for him. She just keeps on showing him life and love and warmth, and he starts to bloom in her presence. And yet, for some reason, her husband is simply not warming up to this child, and this becomes a problem a bit later when my character becomes very ill.
Yes, you, I think you cough in the first 10 minutes. That's required, I believe.
Yes.
And now, did they have to CG out your halo and your golden glow in this film? Because one of the things I really enjoyed, it's a very sweet film, obviously,
yes.
and hopefully folks will go see it, is that you think you've seen every aspect of typical or stereotypical Irish cinema, and there are elements of this film that you don't get that. You don't get the flowing green, and you have a married couple that show, you know, that are tender with each other. And
yes.
even Quinn, you know, the tough Irish dad,
yeah.
there's more layers to him as well. So it was nice to see a new twist on an old story, or at least old stock characters.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that, I they always, like, show one kind of Ireland, and I really feel that it was a wonderful combination of this really rugged place where we were shooting, and at the same time, we were blessed with such unusual, glorious weather while we were shooting that even the locals thought that we were blessed with some kind of extra luck. And that kind of glow is, I think, what you kind of see in the film as well. We were all really grateful for this wonderful, you know, weather, and I think it really suited the film as well.
It's you, Connie. It really is.
he
spoke, and it had good weather, you know, and you got to sort of make out with Aidan Quinn.
And how did you like my Irish accent? Did you buy it?
Well, you know what? I went to the source of all information, the internet, and saw that you spoke several different languages fluently. Correct.
Correct.
Okay. Well, then, yeah, I think you could wrap your mouth around that, sassy lass.
I so enjoyed speaking Irish. It was just such a lovely sound to make, and like great rhythm in the language. It's beautiful.
Speak Irish for me.
Yeah.
No, it's a new variation of talking.
Yeah, it's not
going to
happen. I would never do that.
Fine. No. Well, no. Then I'd have to pay you, and that's a whole other thing.
Yes, exactly.
Now, where exactly did you guys shoot the film, and how long did it take?
This is up at the very, like, one of the very northernmost points of Ireland. And we shot it. I was there personally for 5 weeks, and they had started a couple of weeks before me. So it was a short but comfortable shoot, very comfortable. And I had just had a baby within that first year. It was, like, 9 months when I went to shoot. So it was really... it was a very sort of family-oriented atmosphere. We had all our kids on the set, and we basically rehearsed with my baby on my hip, and then he just sat in my little chair and looked at us while we did the scene and didn't say a word. It was a very sort of welcoming, warm atmosphere while we were shooting.
How much did he get? Hey, you got to work. My wife's equity, and you know that means I think the daughter's equity. So
well, he wasn't quite on screen, so.
Screen?
If not, you know, we wouldn't have had a story. You know?
Come on, Connie, screen credits. We know this. You have an personal
Bryce
assistant slash assist. Yeah, inspiration.
Exactly.
I say, as an actor, what did you get out of working with Aidan Quinn?
Well, you know, this is my second time of working with Aidan. We're getting to feel really comfortable with each other.
First time was.
The first one was well, that title changed in English. It was called Return to Sender in Europe. I forget what it was released as here in America.
I'll check.
But anyways, so we already knew each other really well, and it was just which was really great for the film, because we just had this real comfort and knowledge of each other when we were playing this married couple.
And I know this was John Bell's first film. How do you work with somebody, one, who's playing your son, and one, it's also, I think, it was his first film?
He's so amazing. He's one of those kids that he knew that he was an actor a long time ago, and just have an instinctual understanding of the craft of acting. And I've always treated all actors the same, you know, whether they're child actors or adult actors, and that is, you know, just having a great respect for the other person's craft. And with John, it was that much more easy just because he is so much an actor. You sometimes forget that he's a kid. He's really good, and he's very knowledgeable about what he does already. I'm so astounded by this kid.
I mean, was there bonding sessions that you do when you, I mean, when you're not shooting?
Well, I sort of always try to become like the mother who is not there for them, and it just happens to be a natural thing for me. I have 4 kids back home here, so it's just a normal thing for me.
I say, how did you get about to this project? I mean, this is very personal. It's
personal.
If it was a good world, it would open on 3,000 screens.
I know. It's one of those little stories where your agent calls and says, you know, the script, it's very moving. You know, I don't know if you want to do anything. Just, you know, read it and see what you think. And then I get the thing, and I'm obviously not even thinking of going back to work. I'm still breastfeeding, and I just can't even imagine going back to work. And I start reading it, and by page 30, I'm literally weeping. And I didn't even finish the script. I just called my aunt agent and said I'd do it.
If you don't mind me asking, how old are your kids?
20, 11, 8. And 3.
That's impossible.
No, it's true.
No.
Oh, yes, yes.
And what do they think? How much of mom's work have they seen?
Well, you know, most of my work is R-rated, so they haven't seen an awful lot.
I wonder.
Another reason for me trying to get a little bit more, you know, kid-friendly in my choices here. I've gone from doing rather artsy pictures to much more family-friendly style pictures. It's good for my relationship with my kids. Now they actually do believe me when I say that I'm off working.
Yeah, but do kids up to there just go, hey, I saw your mom in The Devil's Advocate?
No, I know. And literally, like, my oldest son, he has been through that. And he's
mother!
Sort of like, and I said, well, how do you deal with it? And he just, like, says, you know, well, you know, we're European. It's like, this thing is, well, we're European. So
nice comeback.
I think so.
You know, looking back, it's been, as I was going through your IMDb, one thing that it popped to mind was how many, not only the variety, but what really cool directors you've worked with over the years, from Ridley Scott to Taylor Hackford to De Palma and Wes Anderson. I mean, that's got to be a nice feather in the cap.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's always been, you know, about trying to make the best movie I could. You know, that's what it's always been about. And then, of course, it's also been about trying to explode, whatever limits were being put on it just because I'm a girl. You know, it's a constant trying to explode, you know, whatever little boxes people would like to put in. You know?
Woman, Connie, woman.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, when I started, I was a girl.
Well, I give you that. That's true.
Thank you. You should see me. I'm still pretty girly.
I saw the film, and I'll go and Google you later. And I mean that with all due respect. What are you working on next?
I just literally came home 2 days ago from having shot a film in Africa. Again, adoptive child, if you can believe it.
Uh-oh.
This time, I bring my child, my adopted child, to Africa to kind of reacquaint him with where he comes from. Wanted to take him back to the orphanage where I adopted him from, and also, of course, on a safari. And during an orientation meeting, he goes missing. And the film uses this kind of like, you know, sort of like a genre set up of the story to really get the possibility of showing what life is really like in the slum of Kibera outside of Nairobi. It's I think it's going to be pretty spectacular. It was a kind of a life changing experience shooting it.
How long were you over there?
I was over there for 3 weeks, then we finished shooting the rest of it in Denmark.
Anybody else in it that we would know?
No, actually not. The couple of Danish actors, but not ones that have done international films yet.
Well, hopefully we'll see that very soon.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
Okay, a couple film geek things I have to ask. Give us one anecdote on the that you can tell about on the air about Devil's Advocate.
I asked the hairdresser to set my hair in a way I really liked it, you know, to make it look very, very professional. And it was not a good idea. They almost got fired for doing it. Here's one I can tell you that is really amazing. You have to imagine, like, my first shooting day in America, having arrived only a month and a half earlier to New York from Italy, my first shooting day in America was the rooftop scene with Al Pacino and Keanu Reeves. I could hardly speak because I was shooting opposite. I mean, you know, right. Al Pacino was playing my dad. And and so I almost couldn't even speak just as it was because of that. And second of all, I was also almost dying of frostbite because I was wearing like this Calvin Klein evening gown.
Yes, I remember.
In minus 14 degrees or something. At least it felt like minus 14 degrees. Yeah. And do you know what the clincher on that one is?
What's that?
It turned out that there had been a mistake in terms of the stop on the cameras. And so this scene, which was the most expensive scene of them all, the entire Central Park had been lit up by the camera, I mean by our crew.
Mm-hmm.
And you could literally, it was like the big, 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 big dollar scene, and they couldn't use it.
Oh.
They had to reshoot the whole thing in green screen.
Oh my!
In the studio in L.A.
Welcome to Hollywood.
Yeah.
Now I have to ask about Gladiator because there's so many shots. You should be allotted at least shots longer than, you know, 5 to 8 seconds.
Oh, thank you. I'll make sure that gets repeated more.
Yeah, thank you. I'll be in your resume quote file.
Thank you.
Connie, thank you so much for being on the show, and you know, hopefully this film will open in far more theaters across the country.
Yeah, thank you. I hope so too.
Actress and good sport, Connie Nielsen. Oh, the film that she did out with Aidan Quinn before this was called Convicted, directed by Billy August. I got 1 minute. I got to pay tribute to, and I didn't just can't do this last week, famed film editor Dee Dee Allen, who died at the age of 86. Best known, came onto the market, best known probably for editing Bonnie and Clyde.
Wow.
Received Academy Award nominations for Dog Day Afternoon, Reds, and Wonder Boys. Some of her other credits include The Hustler, Serpico, The Wiz, Odds Against Tomorrow, a really cool Robert Ryan crime film with Shelley Winters and Harry Belafonte. Rachel, Alice's Restaurant, Little Big Man, Slaughterhouse-Five, Night Moves, The Missouri Breaks, the greatest hockey movie ever made, Slapshot, Harry and Son, Mike's Murder, Breakfast Club, so Melissa Davis will like it, Milagro, Beanfield War, and Henry in June. Her last film was Fireflies in the Garden. So salute Dee Dee Allen. Can't believe you didn't get nominated for Bonnie and Clyde. That really shook the world as we know it. So thank you for all of your work. And thank you, Mike Perry, for hanging out with me tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, until next time, go see a good movie. You deserve it. Don't forget, this weekend and next weekend, Three Musketeers at Mud Creek Players, 290-5343 for reservations, or go to mudcreekplayers.org, mudcreekplayers.com. I'm Matthew Soucy, and thanks for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.